Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. And I'd like to welcome you. This is going to be a very empowering hour, starting, of course, with the latest on health and healing. I'm going to share some insights on ways that we can all slow down our aging process, even repair damage from mistakes we've made in our life, like drinking or smoking or drugs, or eating a meat-based diet or a lot of sugar or soft drinks. And then we're going to look at foods that can make a difference every day, like walnuts. What do they do? Well, there's a whole lot of studies on walnuts showing it can help you prevent a heart attack, have a healthier heart. Lots on health and healing today. A little piece on the environment. And I'm adding something new to my website starting later today. It's for those who are kind of out of the loop on what's happening around the world. Every day, I will post all the major weather events. For example, in Far Eastern Europe, there was such severe fires that engulfed a whole town. Not a word in the major media in the United States. And you'll actually see the photographs of balconies and houses and apartment buildings all in flames. And this is in Croatia. Beautiful, old world community. They weren't prepared for it. But also we have fires in 22 states in the United States. And in Canada, we have a lot of listeners from Canada. Huge fires. I mean, it looks like something out of a war picture. Apocalypse Now with huge napalm, except it's not napalm, it's a huge boreal forest going up in flames. And once it starts, it goes. Also, just imagine if someone told you in California, just California, no other state, every 24 hours, how many trees die? All right, every 24 hours. Now let's say you got 365 days in a year. What if I told you you're losing almost 300,000 trees a day, every day, over 100 million a year? Seems almost unfathomable, and that's just the beginning. If it continues to accelerate or even go quicker than what it is now, California, you could be without trees in another 10 years. And the trouble is, if you don't have those trees, then you have a lot that's going to burn. So I want to bring you up to date on every weather pattern. Why? Because it's important you realize how serious global warming is, what we should do about it, what are our positive contributions, and what can I personally do about it, each and every one of us. And there are things we can do. I'll get to that a little later on today. Also today, I'm going to give you a larger overview. I'm going to go through several stories, not the whole story. I'll play some video clips, but only a couple minutes. I'll read some articles, but only a page or two, to give you an idea of what you should know about that you may not know. For example, today, from constitutional attorney, one of the best, right up there with Danny Sheehan, John Whitehead. He's written a report about obey or die. What happens when the police pull you over for any reason? What happens when you're not prepared to know what the response could be? So I'm going to quote him and then talk more about that. Max Blumenthal, one of the most respected true journalists in the United States, is going to be in a discussion with Tucker Carlson, talking about something that this should be talked about on liberal radio, but isn't. Why? So I'm going to take you through a lot of different areas, like hiding U.S. lies about Libyan invasion. I'm going to give you information there you haven't heard before. And while attacks in Israel make headlines, humanitarian crisis in Gaza is ignored. So we're going to bring you information that I believe that everyone should be aware of. What you do with it is up to you. I believe in freedom of choice. But how can you do anything if the information you have right now may be biased, may be propagandized? And I'll also today invite one of our scholars and our executive producer, Richard Gale, on air to show you what we do to try to make sure that we vet everything that we bring to you every day. In fact, that's one of the reasons that in 743 personal articles I published in major publications around the world, I've never had to correct a sentence. People don't know what goes on behind the scenes. The well over $1 million spent with lawyers vetting every single line. Every single thing is said has to be proven, same way with documentaries. So we'll share that. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. I'm always asked, well, Gary, if I can only do a few things, what can I do? I'm 55 years old. I'm now seeing my hair coming out. I'm beginning to see some of that crepey skin around my knees and under my arms. And Gary, I used to never have fatigue. Now I'm just fatigued a lot. My gums are receding. Is there anything that can help this? And what you don't want to do, you don't want to oversimplify it. You don't want to get into that game of I'm not willing to make major change, but I want something that's going to make major change. Make it simple, make it inexpensive, make it easy. Unfortunately, you would be lying if you said, oh, this is easy, this is simple. It's not. To be healthy means you have to be diligent every day, 7 days a week. It means you have to be doing everything right all the time. Now, no one's going to do that. Most people would not do that. But as long as most people are making an effort, at least the process of disease will take longer to manifest, and the processing of wellness will be more what you're experiencing. And that's what I want to see. I want to see everyone live a longer, healthier life. So I'm just going to take three nutrients today and why we should be consuming them on a daily basis. Let's start with grape seed extract. Now, if you're eating seeds that have grapes that have seeds in them or blending them in a blender, that's terrific. You can chew them, but you can get a lot more in if you just throw, let's say, a pint of grapes, because they're mostly water, into a blender. And also, I would throw some acerola. Now, acerola is a little tiny red berry, and it's loaded with vitamin C. In fact, it's a superstar, and it's rich in vitamin C. In fact, acerola has 3,000% more vitamin C than oranges. 3,000%, and you've never heard of you. Orange juice gets some vitamin C? Yeah, a little bit, 30 to 50 milligrams, depending upon how much you drink. But if it's pasteurized, you know, a lot of that will go downhill. So then let's look at what happens if we took some potassium, which we need, about 500 milligrams a day, we should be supplementing the rest of our diet. And magnesium, we can get maybe in a good diet, 500 milligrams. So we really need 1,000 milligrams, and I believe once you're past the age of 50, you should be having that about 1,600 milligrams a day. Take, let's say, 800 in the morning, 800 in the afternoon, or before you go to bed at night. It can help prevent a heart attack during the night. But we never think of taking something like acerola. Acerola has potassium, has magnesium, has vitamin A, B complex, calcium, and it is really a superfood, but you never see it on any label as a superfood. It's not sold by itself. It's rich in bioflavonoids. It's rich in rutin and factors that help our immune system. So if you want something to help your immune system, help keep you healthy and stronger all the time in your immune system, then acerola, A-C-E-R-O-L-A, acerola. When I got into the health field, that and rose hips were the two primary forms of vitamin C. You don't get a lot of vitamin C from rose hip. It's a good source, good quality, but acerola berries you can. And so have those. Next, grapeseed. Now, in Europe, they have a lot of grapes, far more variety than what we have. In fact, I went to one farmer's market in Milan, and I wanted to show the host. There were a bunch of us, my brothers, and Franco Pantone, and Chris Calipi. There were a bunch of us that I took over because I was doing a study of comparing family members in the cities like Milan, and which is the business capital and the fashion capital, and Rome in Florence versus members of their family that live in the country. I wanted to see what was the difference. And it was a wonderful study because, without exception, the family members that stayed and lived in the country were healthier, did not have the stress-related diseases, they didn't have high blood pressure and diabetes, and they lived at a completely different pace, very unstressed and happy, where the ones who lived in the cities who had higher education were generally in professions that they were successful in and made good money. In fact, I stayed in one guy's apartment for the day and that night, and it was huge. But from the outside, and this is true all over Italy, from the outside, it's very deceptive. You just see a door, right, and a wall that's rather plain. And it's like New Orleans, the French Quarter. You see some doors plain outside, and you walk in, and whoa, you're suddenly in a 200 to 300-year-old environment with fountains and beautiful flowers and flora and bougainvillea growing up over walls. And you think, my goodness, there are people sitting at the same fountain eating dinner 250 years ago. And in fact, there's two sisters. I don't know if you've ever been to New Orleans. I definitely recommend it. New Orleans is just one of the, got some of the most gifted musicians and cuisines. Probably has a greater variety of cuisine than any other city in the United States. And it's good because they're very critical of their food down there. Two Sisters, one of the restaurants. There's some outstanding restaurants in the French Quarter. I'm talking about the French Quarter. There's also what's called the Flower District, which is also a beautiful area. And then, of course, if you're in the French Quarter, you just go right over the Mississippi. You just walk. It's just three blocks, and you're at the Mississippi. And then you see the opening of the Mississippi and those old steamboats, paddle wheel boats, and you can go up and visit some of the sites, see the bayous. In any case, it's just kind of a romantic place. And if you have a special person to go with you that you want to share that energy, you will absolutely enjoy it and all the tours they have. I just like getting up early in the morning and just, I do my jog up and down the Mississippi when I'm down there. I go down there every year. And then in the morning when I finish my jog, I do a power walk from one end to the other, the entire French Quarter. It's not that big. And it's totally quiet. No one's out. They were up all night drinking and partying. And you're there and you get to see the all the vendors setting up. And they set up stuff that you can't find, foods that you won't find anywhere else. And I can't, the one food, well, there are two foods I can't stand. I can't stand cilantro because it reminds me of, you know, dirty socks, and which is a form of parsley. And also there's a particular little food that they make into a gumbo, but it reminds me of a runny nose, so I stay away from that. But you could eat 100 different gumbos down there, so it's worth going to. In any case, I found something similar when I went into Milan, and here's this building, plain on the outside. It looks just like a regular plain apartment building. But you go inside, and suddenly you realize the apartment you're in is the entire block. It's got like seven bedrooms and terraces and beautiful, beautiful marble floors. And that was not, you know, a particularly unique apartment. It was just a good apartment. What a difference from what we're used to when we go to the cultures and see how they live. Anyhow, I went out that morning and I said, let me treat you since you're being kind enough to spend a day with me and let me know all about your health and your life. I like to know people one-on-one, sit with them, have a meal with them. Don't rush. Tell me about your life. What do you like? What do you don't like? What stresses you? What do you miss from back home? What don't you miss from back home? What have you learned? And without exception, the people I met loved the family they grew up in, but felt that they were a little backwards and they were never going to succeed. And where it was good life, the farm life, the country life, the quiet life, the butterflies and the bouquets and all that, they didn't want that. They wanted the life that, you know, the metropolitan life. And they were engaged in living and enjoying it. But it was stressful. And then they got up in that whole idea of spending more than what they have and everyone rushing to keep up with everyone else. And now they had high blood pressure. One was a doctor. High blood pressure, constipation, and ulcers, and one was diabetic. So the mere fact someone's succeeding doesn't mean they're happy. And that was a big takeaway message. And yet back in, you know, the oldest man, the old father said, when you speak with my son, remind him that we don't have any high blood pressure in this village. We don't have any, you know, we don't have anyone sick here. We're healthy and we miss him. I shared that message with him and he said, you know, I'm going to, like it or not, I'm going to have to go back there for more than just a month. They take the month of August off. When I say they take it off in Italy, it's like the whole country just stops and they don't rush anything, which is good for them. We could use some of that in our country. But I went and there you buy stuff in cases and it's not that expensive. And I wanted to buy some grapes and suddenly I saw, wow, it's like 20 different variety of grapes, all had seeds in them. And so I bought a bunch of grapes back and I treated them. I said, I want to cook you an Italian 12-course meal, but done my way, since you were gracious enough to prepare a wonderful meal your way. And so I made them a wonderful, as I'm a chef, I made them a wonderful meal using vegan, using different sauces for everything. And it was just so much fun. If you haven't had a chance to get off the tourist path and go to a country and see how the actual population lives and where they eat and the foods they eat, that's what I would suggest. Anyhow, back to grape seed extract. So when you're eating the grape seed, that's where most of the energy is. That's where the power is. That's where the healing is. The grape skin and seed is 90% of the value of a grape. So when you're having seedless grapes, you're not getting that value. Now, since ancient times, ancient Greeks, for example, used grapes and grape leaves and the sap for health purposes. And grape seed extract was really only discovered in the 1970s in the United States. We didn't know that those seeds were healthy. We didn't know those help reverse the aging process, slow down the aging process, repair your damaged DNA. We didn't know that, but now we do. And that's why I'm suggesting every day get grapeseed extract into your diet. And it comes in various forms, and it helps your veins. If you have varicosities, it's terrific for poor circulation to the legs. If you have intermittent claudication, which is painful calves, if you have spider veins, if you look down at your feet and they're like little purpley, splotchy spiders, that's because of lack of venous circulation. The veins going down, venous circulation, the arteries carrying it down, the veins bringing it back. And you have all these little flaps that can stop the flow of blood and release the flow of blood. And those should be constantly supplying blood. But they don't always work, especially if you're sitting. Because remember, when you're sitting, your leg goes out and down. That's like putting a crimp into a water hose. You got to let that leg, stretch your legs out. Every half hour, if you're at a desk, stretch your legs out as far as you can, then curl your toes back towards your body, hold it for 10 seconds. Now push your toes like a ballerina up on her toes. Push your toes clear forward as far as you can, keeping your legs straight. Hold it for 10 seconds. Then do that for 10 times. And that way, circulation gets back into the legs, and that can help you. Well, the grapeseed extract can help take away a lot of that. It helps in wound healing. It reduces inflammation. So everyone I know who I'm counseling who has any kind of inflammatory condition like fibromyalgia, arthritis, bursitis, lung infections, congestive heart failure, memory loss, I make sure they're getting about 100 milligrams a day of grapeseed extract. And it's all good. That's important. Now, another thing I recommend every day, and there's at least 6,000 studies in the mainstream peer-reviewed journal on resveratrol. Res, R-E-S, Vera, V-E-R-A, Trol, T-R-O-L. Resveratrol, again, comes from grapes. And it's a molecule found in the skin of red grapes. Why is that important? It prolongs your life. Big time. I make sure every day I get my resveratrol, and I want you to get at least 100 milligrams a day. Now, if I would counsel you and you were sick, you'd be taking a lot more. But for the average person, 100 milligrams is fine. Researchers know that it confers effects because it activates an enzyme called STRT1, which plays a role in extending our lifespan. And studies show anti-aging, anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, and pro-cardiovascular health with resveratrol. And it was very popular in Bordeaux and in Tuscany and in rejuvenating. And they take anti-aging grape barrel baths where they warm a jacuzzi-type whirlpool filled with grape residue and essential oils. And these treatment takes care of a lot of the youthful appearance. You don't get any of that in the United States. But resveratrol also is very important in detoxification. So if you want to detox, especially if you've been drinking alcohol or smoking marijuana, because when I work with people who smoke marijuana, there's a gold glucose poisoning that happens in the brain. And so you're very clear on this, because sometimes people choose to hear by filtration what they want to hear instead of what I'm actually saying. I'm saying I believe all drugs should be decriminalized. I believe every person in prison for use of drugs should be let out and their records expunged so there's no record. I believe that also there should be counseling centers set up in every city in the United States with a protocol, and I have that protocol, I'm happy to share it with anyone, of how to naturally detoxify drug addicts. I was the head of addiction control through Trafalgar Hospital when it was one of the city's a few hospitals that provided methadone, but I didn't like methadone. It's still an opiate. It still is addictive. So getting off heroin, getting on another opiate didn't make any sense to me. The fact it's less toxic is no answer. So I created a holistic protocol to get people off all drugs altogether. And I work with thousands of people and did so. And so understand that depending upon what susceptibility a person has and how much marijuana they smoke, you can cause delusional psychoses, paranoid conditions that are not always transient. I can absolutely confirm that I know people personally who use so much marijuana that even when they gave it up, they were still paranoid and psychotic, both. So the literature says, oh, it's transient. In some people, probably the majority it is. In others, it is not. So legalizing it, stop criminalizing it, and then take the actual science of its cannabinoids, meaning the volatile oils. This is not the same as smoking marijuana, by the way. And those oils, my goodness, to help a person stop a seizure, to help people with glioblastomas or astrocytomas, brain cancers, to help a person with pulmonary conditions, be your first line, first choice. So resveratrol, grapeseed extract, and acerola, three very important nutrients, and I'll add one more in today, and that is walnuts. From the Shenzhen Center for Disease Control in China, a study that was published in a mainstream peer-reviewed journal shows that walnuts lower cardiovascular disease and also boost your endothelial function. This was a meta-analysis. Meta means many studies. And quote from the study, it says, consuming walnuts could help lower the risk of cardiovascular disease by improving endothelial function. And this includes walnuts, but it did not have the same impact with pistachios, hazelnuts, and almonds. Now, those are good for different reasons, but walnuts is the superstar. If you have one nut above all other for health, walnuts is the superstar. Walnuts is the Elvis of the nut world. And there were 10 separate randomized controlled trials using walnuts, and it works. So if you want to have a healthier heart, healthier arteries, rich in the plant-based omega-3 fatty acids, it's that. So that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Knoll, and we film every day. We film live in studio. But then we put the film up on YouTube later that day or the next day and up on Facebook as well. So if you're not able to hear us live each day, you can catch up on Facebook and catch up on YouTube as well. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. This Saturday, 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock, I'll be doing a special webinar on menopause, perimenopause, and postmenopause, how to save women's lives from breast cancer, the symptoms that are irritating, transient, but sometimes they can last years, weight gain, emotional mood swings, loss of hair, loss of the eyebrows, loss of gum health, bone health, libido, all those can be reversed. So that's go to GaryNall.com to get more information on that. Now, I want to share some things that are important, and then we're going to have a discussion on this. Then I'm going to also have a newsmaker on, Professor Michael Hudson, to talk about why it's important to have more than a two-party system that is supported by an oligarchy and a deep state, and why we need multiple voices. And it's okay that these voices can clash or hold difference of opinion, but at least know that you should have other people's coming into your life to share. And then you can determine over a period of time which are credible and which are not, which are reasonable and substantiatable and which are just blowing smoke. And Michael will help us on that. We're going to show you the truth of the economy and not the lies. But first, I believe that we are well into a full-fledged police state. I believe that those of us, I'm going to be somewhere up at the top of that list, are considered a threat to virtually all the major institutions because we don't accept what they say without verification, and more often than not, we find they have lied to us. And so we therefore present alternative information. As I've been preparing and sharing information, all documented, all correct, for example, on health, I haven't had to retract a single sentence or article, book, nothing, because we just don't make stuff up. It's not an opinion. It's scientific fact. And yet imagine what it does if I'm suggesting that the number one thing in the world, and it's true, this is absolutely true, if there's one thing in the world that can help us slow down global warming, can't stop it, but slow it down and lessen its impact, is go to a vegan plant-based diet. That, all the science in the world supports that. There's no science that says, yeah, eat more meat. We need more methane, and the methane is going to, what? You know, methane is going to contribute to global warming. But now imagine taking that truth and then making it a reality. Yesterday afternoon, I filmed a doctor here. And it was the final filming before we release in the next month or 6 weeks our newest hard-hitting documentary. And this is not a feel-good documentary. This is most really hard-hitting ones. But it's a truth we need. And he said something at the beginning of the interview, and I wasn't filming him yet. I wished I had. And he just looked up at me, and he said, you know, Gary, the truth doesn't count anywhere in America today. What do you mean? He said, my colleagues, my medical colleagues, don't care about the truth. They could find the truth. They don't. The truth that they want is one that, as long as they're complying with what they're told, they're happy. They're going to go along with it. They're rewarded for their compliance. I, on the other hand, he's talking about himself, I am criticized, ridiculed, mocked, and attacked for my opinion, even though my opinion is based upon facts and theirs is based upon propaganda. So where does the truth come into this? I said, well, instead of being negative about it, why don't you look at the fact that there are a lot more people than what you might suspect who want to hear the truth also? Probably, I'm going to say a good 10% of the American population are definitely interested in not the official line, the official story, in anything, but rather the truth, wherever it comes from. And I gave them some numbers at the Progressive Radio Network that support that. We're the number one go-to place in the world for progressive information and challenges and calls to actions and documentation, because anytime there's a family that has had a child that's been injured by vaccines, they come to us. We also recommend Barb Lou Fisher and many other, Louisa Bacchus and other organizations who've been damaged, but we provide the actual science because others are not scientists. They wouldn't necessarily be able to collect all the information or read it and as we do all day, every day. So we know how many people are out there. I'm going to guess right now about 30 million Americans. That's a lot of people. 30 million Americans thrive on the truth, but you don't hear about them. And I said, so don't be discouraged because the people you associate with are not wanting your truth. They have their own. So I believe that the media only shares what is in its best interest when it could be otherwise challenged. So as long as it's not threatened, it'll present a story to you. And it may be objective, may be honest. But boy, when there is any money involved, when they could lose a major advertiser giving them hundreds of millions of dollars a year, you can bet that they're going to side with either self-censorship or presenting the argument in such a way that there's no way the public would know the truth. That said, I've been posting on a regular basis those innocent individuals who have been assaulted, tasered, or killed when they were not armed, they were not provocative, they were even compliant. And I have to ask, how did we get to this place? This is from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. In dissenting opinion on Colton versus Kentucky, 1972, quote, since we as Americans have been expected to bow submissively to authority and speak with awe and reverence to those who represent us, since when the constitutional theory is that we, the people, are the sovereigns, the state and federal officials only are agents. We who have the final word can speak softly or angrily. We can speak with challenge and annoy, as we need not stay docile and quiet. End quote. Now I'm going to ask you to do something for a moment. Forget everything you've been taught about free speech in America. Why? It's all a lie. There can be no free speech for the citizenry when the government speaks in a language of force. What is this language of force? And see if this represents anything that you're aware of. Militarized police, riot squads, camouflage gear, black uniforms, armored vehicles, mass arrest, pepper sprays, tear gas, batons, strip searches, surveillance cameras, Kevlar vests, drones, lethal weapons, less than lethal weapons unleashed with deadly force, rubber bullets, water cannons, stun grenades, arrest of journalists, crowd control tactics, intimidation tactics, brutality. This is not the language of freedom. This is not what a constitution that I abide by and believe in was written about. This is altogether different. This is not even the language of law and order. This is the language of brute force and intimidation, and that is the law of the land today. Unfortunately, this is how the government at all levels, federal, state, and local, now responds to those who choose to exercise their First Amendment rights the peaceful assembly in public and challenge the status quo. This police overkill isn't just happening in troubled hotspots like Ferguson, Missouri or Baltimore, Maryland, where police brutality gave rise to civil unrest. This is everywhere, on every street in America. Now, a decade earlier, the New York Police Department engaged in mass arrests of peaceful protesters and bystanders and legal observers and journalists who had gathered for the 2004 Republican National Convention. The protesters were subjected to blanket fingerprinting and detained for more than 24 hours at a filthy, toxic pier that had no one there except those who were deposed. That particular exercise and police intimidation tactics cost New York City taxpayers $18 million for what would become the largest protest settlement in history. Demonstrators, journalists, and legal observers who had gathered in North Dakota to peacefully protest the Dakota Access Pipeline reported being pepper sprayed, beaten with batons, and strip searched by police. Oh, and did I mention that at Occupy Wall Street and at all of the protests in the United States now, every single protest of any size in the United States, Homeland Security and police departments and the FBI have infiltrated with agents to be provocateurs, find out who are the leaders, and then go in and get those people and put them under 24/7 surveillance, get iris scans of their eyes, get fingerprints, anything they can get so they know everything about the person, because now you're considered an enemy combatant of the United States, a local terrorist, a domestic terrorist. That's exactly what was revealed in WikiLeaks by Julian Assange from the actual documents at FBI. Most recently, the militarized exercise in intimidation reared its ugly head in the college town of Charlottesville, Virginia, where protesters who took to the streets to peacefully express their disapproval of a planned Ku Klux Klan rally were held at bay by implacable lines of gun-wielding riot police. Only after a motley crew of Klansmen had been safely escorted to and from the rally by black-garbed police did the assembled army of city, county, and state police declare the public gathering unlawful and proceed to unleash canisters of tear gas on the few remaining protesters to force them to disperse. To be clear, this is the treatment being meted out to protesters across the political spectrum. The police do not discriminate. As a USA article states, quote, federally armed police with weapons of war silences protesters across all justice moments. People demanding justice, demanding accountability, or demanding basic human rights without resorting to violence should not be greeted with machine guns and tanks. Peaceful protest is democracy in action. It is a form for those who feel disempowered or disenfranchised. Protesters should not have to face intimidation by weapons of war. End quote from the USA Today. A militarized police response to protesters poses a danger to all those involved, protesters and police alike. In fact, militarization makes police more likely to turn to violence to solve problems, as a recent study by researchers at Stanford University makes clear. Quote, when law enforcement receives more military materials, weapons, vehicles, and tools, it becomes more likely to jump into high-risk situations. Militarization makes every problem worse. Even the color of a police officer's uniform adds to the tension. As the Department of Justice reports, quote, some research has suggested that the uniform color can influence the wearer, with black producing aggressive tendencies, tendencies that may produce unnecessary conflict between police and the very people they serve. So, you want to turn a peaceful protest into a riot? Bring in the militarized police with their guns and black uniforms and war zone tactics and comply or die. Ratchet up the tension across the board. Talk about what should be a healthy exercise in constitutional principles, free speech, assembly, and protest, and it turns into a lesson in authoritarianism. Mind you, those who respond with violence are playing into the government's hands perfectly. And I want to tell you that I am completely against anarchists showing up and burning cars and looting buildings. Did you ever stop and think, whose car is that they just burned? Was that one of the oligarchs? Was that Bill Gates? Was that Warren Buffett? Was that George Soros? No. It's just a person who's now got a torch car, a small business. And you go and you destroy a business because you're angry? And then you hide behind a mask that you're wearing? And now the people see you and burning and looting. They don't see the legitimate nonviolent protest, nor do they understand the message of that protest. I never will forget it, but I've led over 100 major protests. And up at Indian Point, we were able to get the media there. And all of us who wanted to have it closed, Harvey Wasserman and all the others who had worked so diligently in closing nuclear plants, and we had brought people in from around the United States who were going to give their message, and we were all prepared. And I'm guessing about maybe 1,000 people from my audience were there. And suddenly some guys went out and started laying down in the road right in front of the police. And I walked over and I said, hold on, fella. What are you doing? Well, you know, we're going to show and they're going to arrest us. I says, and you know what all these camera crews going to do? They're going to film you yelling and screaming and be arrested. And all these people that came with a legitimate message about what's wrong with Indian Point, what's wrong with all nuclear power facilities and handing out literature and documentaries, no one's going to pay attention to that story. So is that your intent, to have you being arrested on camera and everyone else had spent over a half year planning this? I said, so I'm going to make it clear. I'm going to go over to the microphone and say you're a provocateur, and if you want to be arrested, that's your business. So I went over to the state police guy, and I said, this guy is not a part of us. He does not represent us. So I went over to the media. I said, that man does not represent us. Now, I know, I've been around long enough to know that every single demonstration has provocateurs. Every single demonstration. There's not one. And you think at a meeting of a national board or a local station board you don't have provocateurs, then you are more than naive. Everyone that represents a threat to the establishment is going to have infiltration. And then you wonder why nothing ever works. And there's never agreement. And you're always in trouble and debt. Well, that's one of the reasons. So after I spoke and I got the mic and I told people, and then suddenly no one paid attention. So it's his right to get arrested. Go ahead. But you don't speak for us. And we have to start having some real mature adults, and especially getting people from the older generation who've been around a while, instead of being excluded like, oh, you're too old. We're young and hip. No, you may be young and you may be hip, but you don't have the knowledge and wisdom of decades of civil rights movement and decades of women's movements and decades of human rights movement. And it wouldn't hurt you to lower your ego, your narcissistic sense of self-importance, and realize it doesn't hurt at some point in your life to allow people who've had that experience want to help you and work together. This whole generation fighting each other has got to stop. It's counterintuitive and counterproductive. We are all citizens of this country. We are all wanting to live in peace. We are all wanting equality. And therefore, we have to cooperate. Well, we got good coverage that day. Outstanding coverage. And because of that, that helped lead to the movement to close down Indian Point. So our efforts bore fruit. And there's more to come. But just remember, you do not always have everyone on your side. So we will not be silent. We will not be surveilled. We will not be compliant. It is our right to protest. It is our right not to be powerless in the face of overwhelming armed forces and military. And yet, when did it happen that we and the Democrats and the corporate liberals stopped protesting the militarization of our police and America becoming a police state? Because when you forget about those issues, you lose contact with your future. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's now go over and say hello to my guest who's patiently standing by, and he is been on this program many times. He is Professor Michael Hudson, one of our nation's most finest and important economists, because he tells the truth. Nice to have you with us today, Michael.
Good to be here.
Michael's also the author of Killing the Host, How Financial Parasites and Debt Bondage Destroy the Global Economy. His website is michael-hudson.com. Michael, I've invited you on for a simple reason. Just 2 days ago in the morning, when I was in the gym doing a workout, they had this television on, and it was on one of the major network economic shows. I think it was MSNBC or one of them. And every single one of the hosts said that the economy is great because all of the basics are there. Everything that's supposed to be right is right. The corporations are making lots of profit. People are being hired at record numbers. Unemployment's as low almost as it can get. And I'm thinking, they got to be kidding. The fundamentals, they're saying the fundamentals are there. The fundamentals are not there. So I wanted to ask you the following. Tell us about what they missed when they said America's economy is great, the fundamentals are all there, and unemployment is low, and we should all be very grateful for this huge 30% increase since Trump's election in the value of the equity market, the stock market. The forum is yours.
Well, most of the reporters are very well paid and have a lot of money in the stock market. And for them, everything's going right. The stock market is going up. And Donald Trump keeps saying, look at the stock market going up, taking credit for it. But the stock market's disconnected from the economy. The fact is that wages have not gone up at all. And the employment has been going up, but it's all been in the retail sales area and the low-priced, the low-wage areas. And so people are having more and more difficulty trying to break even. And I think over half of the American population was reported recently is only having $400 is their whole liquid net worth available for emergencies. And that means that half the population is living from paycheck to paycheck. And if they get sick or if they get hurt, or if there's an accident or they suddenly need money, they're broke. They miss a rental payment. They miss a credit card payment. The interest rates they have to pay on these credit cards jump to about 29%, plus a lot of penalties. And insurance company, credit card companies are making more money on penalties now than they're making in interest. And so the economy at large is falling further and further behind, but the reporters that you hear on television aren't part of the economy at large. They're reading the handouts that they're given from the White House or from lobbyist organizations who are doing just fine. So what we're seeing is the economy bifurcating, going the rich are getting very much richer, very faster, and the rest of the population is being squeezed and squeezed and squeezed.
I'd like to share some actual statistics, something that I did not hear in the discussion about how well everyone's doing. Because if you say, Michael, if you said you're doing really well, you have $100,000 a year in salary and you got $50,000 in your bank account, I would then ask, okay, how much debt do you have? Well, I've got $500,000 in debt. And so then you're not doing well, because your debt far exceeds your capacity to service your income. Here is the actual debt. These are official statistics. Our current gross domestic product is $18.9 trillion. But the U.S. total debt is $68.7 trillion. We have a national debt of $19.8 trillion. The U.S. federal spending is $4 trillion. The state debts, how much the states owe, and by the way, all except one state are in debt. They can't balance their budget, even though it's by constitutional mandate, including in New York and California, you must balance your budget. They're bypassing this in any case. $1.2 trillion. Local debt, meaning cities like New York City, $1.9 trillion in debt. The total interest paid is $2.5 trillion, and that's interest mainly to banks. The total personal debt you were referring to how little money people actually have. Well, what we have to add is if you only have $400 or couldn't get $400, then you've got $18 trillion in debt. Our mortgage debt, which is separate from personal debt, is $14 trillion. Our student debt, which is separate from personal and mortgage, is $1.4 trillion. Our credit card debt, which is separate from student mortgage and personal debt, is $1 trillion. And then we have unfunded liabilities of $106 trillion. Now, you add all that up, and we're at $200 trillion in total debt against an income of 18.9. That means that we have more debt than asset than any other country in the world. We're bankrupt. Now, but people have money, and here's another figure. Our latest research today, Michael, showed that there's 10.2 million millionaires in the United States. That excludes their property, meaning they've got $1 million net without even counting the real estate. They have four people per family. That's 40 million people are living well. So if you wonder who can afford these expensive restaurants and these designer gowns and these trips, it's the super rich. And they're the kids that go to New York University and go to other schools, and people have unlimited amounts of money to pay for them, and they're not using debt. Then you have, and here's the deception, you have 17.8 million professionals, lawyers, doctors, engineers, architects, professors, accountants. These are people who make between $100,000 to $500,000 a year, but live as if they're millionaires. Their kids go to the same schools, Harvard, Yale, go out, party, spend money. They have designer clothes. They, you know, do the Hampton thing as well. And yet they're doing it based upon debt. You ask the average lawyer, you ask the average CPA, if you change your lifestyle, would you get out of debt? And the answer is yes. Are you willing to? And the answer is I can't. So these people with four per family, you're dealing with almost right there, 100 million people. So, or excuse me, over 60 million people. So between the really rich and those that are upper middle class but not rich but are always in debt, then that gives you an approximately 100 million people. That still leaves 230 million people, the ones you were talking about, who are really hit. And then the official unemployment rate is 4.8%, but the actual unemployment rate is 23%, and they won't acknowledge this, and therefore people are not aware of the truth of all this. So your thoughts on what happens when we look at real figures instead of those that have been altered, smoothed, censored, or in some way adulterated from the mainstream media?
Well, every 3 months, the Federal Reserve Board publishes the figures that you read out at the beginning of your statement. Now, you'd think that the newspapers every 3 months would pick this up and analyze them exactly the way that you've done. But there's no mention at all. You don't find it on the first page or even in the first section. You may find it once in a while, just as a small note in the business section. Why aren't people talking about this? Well, to begin with, you have to look at the various types of debt. The first type of debt you mentioned was the government debt. That's not a problem, because the debts don't have to be repaid. The government debt includes the money you're carrying in your pocket, and that's just a nominal debt. The debt goes up year after year. It's never paid. The second element of debt you mentioned is what you should really worry about. That's the state and local debt. Now, you point out that states are supposed to have a balanced budget, but they don't. And in fact, the biggest debt of all is something that most people would gloss over. And it's what you said of underfunded future liabilities. And what this means is pensions. You have Illinois now with its bonds reduced to junk status. New York and California are pretty much on that line. That the states in general are so broke because of their refusal to tax the rich, the refusal to tax commercial real estate, that they're not going to pay the pensions that they had promised to pay and that the workers expected to pay. So when we're dealing with workers that say, well, I only have $400 in my pocket for emergencies, but hey, I'm going to get Social Security and a pension, there's now a belief that the next plan of either the Republicans or the Democrats together will be to wipe out the pension liabilities of the states and localities for the public workers, the union workers, and for others, and at the same time to wipe out the debts that the retail stores and other companies owe to their employees. Sears, Macy's are all in the process of being folded. Bankruptcies throughout the retail sector especially are spreading. The retail stores are going to be closed down. So there goes the employment growth. So the fact is that these debts are so large that they can't be paid. Now, this is what people should be talking about. The question about whose debts are going to be paid and whose debts are not going to be paid. In 2008, either the banks could be bailed out or the mortgage borrowers have taken out junk mortgage, high interest loans. And the Obama administration said, pay the banks, leave the mortgages in place, save Wall Street, not the economy. And the debts have all been left in place. And this is the debt problem we're dealing with. And when you're dealing with the problems between the federal government and the state, this is very much like Europe's problem with Greece. It says no government, national government is responsible for any other's people. Greece is going to be submitted to absolute austerity. People are having to leave the country to emigrate to find jobs elsewhere. That's going to be happening in states of America that are going bankrupt. Illinois, Chicago, other states are all going to have to leave their state in order to find work because the states are being closed down, the infrastructure is collapsing. So that people say that the debts have to be paid, but they're not asking whose debts have to be paid, and somebody has to lose. And if the debts are paid, is it worth paying the debts and not fixing the subways, not fixing the roads, not fixing the bridges, and letting America end up in a third world country status, sort of like Greece or Latvia or the other countries that I discussed in Killing the House?
I appreciate that overview. And let us remember there are 20 million Americans right now living in gated communities. They deserve that. They worked hard. I support them. And yet many of them are living on savings and their pensions. So what happens when you live in a gated community and you're having a good quality life and now your pensions have been cut or eliminated? And that, as you and I both know, is going to start happening all across the country. So right. People who put in their long years and good service, were honest and dedicated, good citizens, there is no plan B right now for a single one of those people to be helped. And they don't have the skills at their age to go back into the market and compete again, start all over. So we're going to see absolute social chaos when pensions across the country are cut and below a level that people cannot exist on. And that's already happening now. Michael, thank you for being on, and we look forward to our next conversation. The People's Economist, Michael Hudson. He never lies. He's there to tell us the truth, and he doesn't sugarcoat anything. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. And we posted today the best sources for quality information. It's free. It's a public service. And these are sources you can trust. You won't find the New York Times, CNN, the Washington Post, any of the networks in there. But these are good sources. Go to Gary Nall, go to PRN.FM, that's ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, either one, and you can get that list downloaded, and therefore you'll know sources you can get. Have a nice day, everyone.
First the tide rushes in, plants a kiss.